What is up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Indeed.com. When you're hiring for your business, there's usually a choice. Hire fast or hire well. But what if you want to do both? Then you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Indeed has a powerful suite of hiring tools, which I'm going to tell you all about during the break in the show. But if you want to get started right now, you just got to head over to Indeed.com/iLab. Indeed knows when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. So visit Indeed.com/iLab to start hiring now. That's Indeed.com/iLab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, let's kick off this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey, bosses, this is Johnny, and welcome to episode 255 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. It's been about a month since I've been in Greece by the time this comes out, and today I should be in Moldova, Chisinau, Moldova, if all things go well.
I have no idea where that even is, Johnny. Say that one more time.
So the country is Moldova, and right. The capital is called Chisinau or Chisinau. I can't even pronounce it, to be honest.
I got to look this up. Oh, it's okay. Chisinau. Sure. We'll go with that. Let me look on the map. I like this. It's like a geography lesson every time I talk to you. So I know where Athens is.
Oh, yeah.
But these harder ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Explain to me where it's at. I'm looking at it right now.
So it's right south, like it's basically touching Ukraine. It's the southern country. I think that all the countries that would touch it would be maybe Poland, Hungary, Belarus, Russia, and Moldova. I think those are all the countries that directly connect to Ukraine. And I originally was going to fly into Poland and then take the train over, because that's kind of the most common route. But turns out Chisinau is actually a lot closer. The train isn't really possible to go for a few reasons, but there is an overnight bus, which I've taken once. It takes, I think, something like 13 hours of sitting on a bus, but it is kind of the fastest way to go.
And you know what? I've been within, I don't know, 40 miles from Moldova and didn't even know it. The city of Odessa is very close to Moldova.
Yeah. And before the war, it was very easy and cheap to kind of go back and forth. Now it's expensive, you know. I mean, speaking of inflation, which is this week's episode, war inflation and fuel inflation is a real thing, because I would have thought a bus ride from Kyiv to Chisinau, you probably used to cost something like 20 or 30 bucks. Now it's 60. That's what I paid last time when I did it.
Which still sounds crazy cheap, but when you put it in context of what it used to cost to now, that's 100% increase, which is insane.
Yeah, it's like, you know, part of it is just it's more complicated to go, because now you're going, you know, from a country at war to,
you know. I feel like the bus driver should definitely get a raise for having to go into a country that's under war.
Yeah. So some hazard pay, you know, and then the borders become unpredictable because it could be longer and the fuel prices are higher and everything. So yeah, it makes sense.
So the topic of this episode is about inflation. This is just Johnny and I. We're going to talk about what we see, what specifically the U.S. government is saying about inflation and other governments around the world, and if it's really adding up to what we're seeing personally.
Yeah, spoiler alert, there is inflation. But let's first talk about inflation around the world. I think that'd be a fun topic. And then the second half, we could talk about what we've personally seen in the U.S. and places where we live. Because one way to actually get around inflation is to go somewhere with high inflation, but spend U.S. dollars. That's the kind of the ultimate hack where everything actually ends up being cheaper.
So for someone who doesn't leave the U.S. very often, I think this is a really strange concept to just pack a bunch of cash and your money goes a lot further. So when you're used to just spending U.S. dollars for everything and that's the home currency, it seems odd that this is some kind of hack. So Johnny, you've done this quite a few times where you're in a different country most of the year. You're actually probably the U.S. is one of the least countries you're in per year when you go by day count. How would a U.S. citizen take advantage of this process? How do you travel with cash? What do you do with the cash when you're there? Can you kind of break it down for everybody?
Yeah, so normally it's very easy because you can just use your ATM card really anywhere in the world. You know, just by having, you know, even a single card, like a Charles Schwab card, which is a MasterCard, I think it's a Visa based card. Normally it works in like 99% of countries. Like if I go to Thailand or something, I just take money out of the ATM, you get a very fair conversion rate. By using a card like Charles Schwab, they not only do they not charge you to take out money worldwide, but they even refund you the actual charge that other banks will charge you. Like, I don't know if you guys ever seen it where it says warning, you know, by using this ATM, you have to pay an extra $5. Charles Schwab and a few others.
I think Chase will do that as well. I have a business account with Chase and I think they'll do that. There are a select few that do it, but yeah, you got to be careful about those fees because they can add up. But research, if you travel internationally a lot or just have to use the ATM a lot, there are some bank institutions that will refund those fees.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. And definitely don't take advantage of it, like where, you know, you never use that account otherwise and you take out $40, you know, 20 times during your trip, because then they'll close your account for that. I've heard a lot of backpackers complaining that Charles Schwab, you know, closed their account. I said, you know, like, if you're costing them more money than you're potentially ever going to make for them, yeah, I would close your account as well.
Yeah, and it just looks suspicious. You know, you're taking out money every couple of days and you're in a different location all the time. I could see that happening. You got to be careful going international, and these red flags happen on accounts quite often, and there's people that have to investigate that.
Yeah, so I would definitely recommend having a backup card, and it sounds insane because in the US, like, I'm curious how many listeners even know if your credit card is a Visa or a MasterCard, because it almost doesn't matter. It's like saying, do you want, you know, like, what brand water do you want? And it's like, like, it literally almost doesn't matter. Yeah, but
you know,
in
what?
Some countries it does.
I think that's true, because the only one I really know is I use an American Express for my main thing, and they have a lot of crazy perks, and they're really good at branding. Like, American Express's marketing department is great. So that one I could tell you. My debit card, I honestly don't know. Is it Visa? Is it MasterCard? I don't know. I would have to pull it out of my wallet.
So actually, American Express is a whole nother animal, and it actually doesn't work in most countries. So
I found that
definitely
out
don't try
as
to
well.
Travel. Yeah. So what I personally have for ATM cards is I have a Schwab card, which I believe is now a Visa or a MasterCard. They keep changing back and forth. And then I have a Revolut card, which is kind of a online bank in Europe that you can store different currencies in. So I definitely recommend that. And that way you have a backup and you have something different, you know, so you don't get stuck in Bosnia like I did without cash.
So I just had to look, and I was right no matter what I said, because my personal account is a MasterCard and my business account is a Visa. So I got both covered.
All right, there you go. Done. So unfortunately, this, I don't want to say it's not a hack, this normal way of getting money out doesn't work in a lot of countries with high inflation, because there is a official rate, and then there is the what they call the gray market or the black market rate. But what that really means is just if you go to, you know, any cash exchange place on the street or even on a bank on the street corner, they're going to give you what the street rate is. And as much as governments don't want to admit it, the street rate is the real rate.
Sure, that makes sense. You know, it's kind of like suggesting a manufacturer suggesting a price, but if it's not the price you actually pay at the store, then the actual price is the actual price. I've noticed wild differences in these exchange places when you walk by, because they always post, they especially post US dollar, euro a lot of times, the big currencies on what their exchange rate is. And if you pay attention to them, you can see pretty big swings in the prices.
Yeah, and one good kind of hint on those is the bigger the spread, the worse rate they're probably giving you.
Explain what that means.
So if it says, you know, the buy rate is, you know, 35, but the sell rate is 40, that's like a 20% spread.
Oh, gotcha. And so that's like, that means that's like their take.
They're screwing you.
Okay.
Yeah. But if it's like, you know, 36 and 35, then you're like, okay, you know, these guys are making a little bit of money, but, you know, they're not being greedy.
Yeah. Obviously they can't run a business for free, but you're right. If there's a wide gap between the buy and sell rate, then there's something to look out for. That's a good point.
Yeah. So while traveling, I always carry at least a few hundred dollars in cash, usually, you know, $200-$300 in US dollars, just in case, you know, you get stuck somewhere. But in times of high inflation, where you get a much better rate on the ground, you should take a few thousand dollars or however much you plan on spending. It's not legal to bring in more than $10,000 without declaring it and paying taxes on it. I personally would never travel with $10,000 anyways. It just feels a bit uncomfortable to bring that much cash somewhere. But in countries like Argentina, where the official rate is like, how many? It's what? One. Let's see, one peso. Let me reverse this because it's a little bit too hard to understand the other way. $1 would get you 154 pesos officially, but on the street, I'd be willing. It's probably double that right now.
That's tough math to think about too. 154. Okay. So you get 300. See, this is the problem. This is why if I go to another country, I need to exchange my money right away. Otherwise I get lost and I'm like, wait, what's the exchange rate? And you break it out the calculator and every country is so different. It's like, you just got to remember, like when we were in Ukraine, I remember, I think it was like 35-1 and you find yourself just doing some math in your head. Like, wait, is this a good deal? I'm not totally sure.
Yeah. A kind of hint on that is I just try to memorize how much the biggest bill is worth. And if it's, you know, there's some countries where the biggest bill is, it's, you know, it's still a lot of money. But like, for example, in Ukraine or in Thailand, the biggest bill is 1,000, you know, baht or 1,000 hryvnia. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is a $30 bill. So anything, you know, like anything that's much less than that, you know, if it's the 100 hryvnia bill, it's $3. If it's the 1,000 hryvnia bill, it's $30. You know, I just round it, keep it easy.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, yeah.
So I just took a look at the street rate, the actual real rate of the Argentine peso, and you get 288. To the dollar,
that's
which
a
is
huge
almost
swing.
Double.
And what was 153? You said to 288. Yeah,
yeah,
that's crazy.
So in countries where they're artificially keeping the currency down to make inflation look lower, or make their currency look more stable, it is good to bring in U.S. dollars.
Here's a question for you, Johnny. I've done this a couple times just because I wanted to arrive with the currency of the country I'm going to in hand. Would you say it's a better deal to do this in the US or to exchange it when you get to that country?
100% of the time, once you get to the other country. It's, I mean, the only reason why people do this is because they're not savvy travelers, and they think that going to their bank to, you know, order euros or order, you know, liras or whatever it is beforehand will make it safer for them. The thing is, at every airport, there's going to be a exchange. Anyway, there's always going to be an ATM. Anyways, you will always get a better rate once you're in that country. It doesn't make any sense why they would have Turkish liras in Los Angeles. It costs money to do that.
Totally. And if you're going from one of those currencies that are, not a top 20 currency or so, it's pretty difficult to find. You're going to waste a lot of time driving around to find a place that even has that currency.
Yeah, but one actual very easy way to get a really good rate, as well as helping out your friends, is just to ask around, like post on Facebook or Instagram, I'm going to Turkey. Does anyone have any liras they want to trade for USD? And if someone's been there in the last couple of years and they just have a bunch sitting in their drawer, you're doing them a favor, they'll probably give you a good rate.
I make it a thing to just spend all the extra money I have. So I will buy so much junk and crap if I have leftover currency, just because I don't want it. I'm like, when am I ever going to be back here or use this again? So I end up buying worthless crap, which I guess boosts the economy of the country I'm in.
Yeah, or the airport.
Yeah, the airport. That's
usually where you end up spending. Yeah. So just for fun, I sent you the link to the kind of world list of highest inflation and lowest inflation. Do you want to try to guess where they have negative inflation or zero inflation?
You did not send me the link, but I'm going to guess.
Oh, more fun.
Zero inflation. Okay.
Yeah, what are the countries with the lowest inflation right now?
The lowest inflation. I got to think, I'm going to say, we're not hearing a lot from Asia and China. What are those numbers kind of looking like?
It depends where, but yeah, some places, no inflation. Macau, but that's kind of a very small place. Taiwan, surprisingly, doesn't have that much inflation either. It's at 2.75%. Officially, China's at 2.8, but who knows with China? They lie about everything. Japan is at 3%. So yeah, Asia is actually doing pretty good. I would say most of the countries that I'm looking at, they're nowhere as bad as it is in the U.S.
Yeah, I feel like the U.S. and Europe have been hit the hardest, or maybe that's just the ones we hear about, because I'm telling you what, everything I order on Amazon or anywhere else is still coming from China, and nothing's changing that anytime soon, I don't think. So is there any other places that stand out with low or zero inflation?
Panama, Bolivia, so a lot of places in South America. Okay. Are doing pretty good.
I think there's also extreme the other way in South America a lot too. I know we touched on Venezuela. I think Argentina is really high.
Yeah. So those are two countries that potentially, it would be excellent to bring US dollars into. I wouldn't risk going to Venezuela right now, but I've heard Argentina is very safe and it's very nice. So that is a great place as an American to fly down to, fly down there with a couple grand in US dollars, spend, the whole winter. Why not? Have a great time.
Yeah, totally. I was actually supposed to go to Argentina a few months ago. I was going to run a marathon down there. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but it's still on my list. It looks beautiful down there.
Yeah. And, it almost sounds kind of crazy, but by bringing in US dollars into these countries, in some ways, we're actually helping the country get out of this massive inflation and bring in US dollars. I know countries Sri Lanka really wanted US dollars to kind of stabilize the currency. So, you're not necessarily just taking advantage of the situation. You're sometimes, helping out the local population as well. Maybe they were hurt with tourism, having the skill after COVID. And, it's kind of a way to revitalize the countries as well while we travel and get a good deal.
So as long as you're on this list, Johnny, of the countries that have inflation around the world, I think because obviously the vast majority of our listeners are in the U.S. or if they're not, they're expatriates from the U.S. Where does the U.S. stand on that list? Because we see the media and it's like the U.S. inflation is on fire. What are we going to do? We always we think we're the best and worst at everything. So I got to assume the U.S. is not number one. I know we're not number one on inflation, but where do we rank? And what are some of the other countries that are actually worse off than the U.S. right now?
You know what? I think you'll be surprised. I sent you the link in Zoom. I'll send it to you here on WhatsApp as well. You'll be surprised where we are. Like, if you were to guess, do you think we're kind of more towards the top, like you know, the worst, or the highest or lowest compared to other countries?
I'm going
to
say not top 10, but maybe somewhere just up between 10 and 20 on the list. I'm going to say there's probably like 10 countries that are worse than us.
Well, remember, there's a lot of countries in the world too, so.
Okay, well. Oh, I'm looking at your list. Oh, wait. Oh, I gotta sort it out to the other way around here. Oh, wow. There's some wild ones on here, Johnny. I can't even find the U.S. on the list. I'm going to have to do a search. So we're definitely not top 20.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of countries in the world. But we are right under Albania, Finland, Singapore, South Africa. We're sitting here officially at 8.2% on this list.
There we go.
So we're really not that high. I mean, like, there's so many more countries that have higher inflation right now.
Wow, yeah, I was way off. We're somewhere, I guess if I look on the page, it's about 40% down the list. So yeah, we're maybe just above the middle.
Yeah, so we're doing better than pretty much all of Europe, all of Africa, you know, the UK, a lot of these countries that we mentioned in South America, you know, even Greece has high inflation. You know, I just spent $10 to buy a chicken at the butcher, and I think it probably used to be half of that in Greece. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's I could almost buy a chicken for $10, I bet.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's the only good thing about us, you know, Americans messing up, you know, the world economy, is we tend to drag down everyone with us. And we're very lucky that because we hold U.S. dollars, at least for now, we are the world's reserve currency. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. It's definitely not going to become Bitcoin anytime soon. It's definitely not going to be the euro. It's so unstable. It definitely won't be the Chinese RMB, which nobody trusts. So I think we're in a pretty good spot for now. So if you're not American, I would definitely suggest holding some U.S. dollars somewhere, whether it's in a, you know, Revolut account or in a bank account somewhere. But as Americans, we are very fortunate.
You know what? That's a good point. If something bad is happening to us, it's going to be that much worse for another country because our economy is so dominant and drives a lot of the world that it might seem bad to us, but that hit is going to hit a lot harder to other countries. I just had a thought, Johnny, where the U.S. has an advantage here. I just realized I could buy two chickens for $10. You know why?
Ooh, why?
Costco chickens, $5 each. They have not changed the price, and they said they have no plans to ever change the price. So that's one inflation-resistant product.
Yeah. I mean, what people don't factor in, though, is $60 a year to have that membership, that privilege to buy that chicken. Second, people are spending money driving there and fuel. And third, it is a loss leader. It is subsidized by Costco. They're not making any money from that. They're just hoping to buy a bunch of other crap, because I will guarantee no one has ever walked into Costco and just bought a chicken and walked out.
If someone has, you have the greatest willpower in the world, and we need to work together.
No, well, I would actually think otherwise. I would think that person just wasted a bunch of gas and time to save a couple bucks on a chicken. And it would have been better if they walked to their local corner store and were, you know, local supermarket and bought something there.
All right. If you're walking distance to a Costco, we'll give you a pass. But otherwise, avoid Costco.
There you go. So let's take a quick break and then let's come back and talk about prices in the U.S. and inflation in the U.S. in all the different categories, because I think this is what is going to be most exciting to us as Americans, but also to a lot of our listeners.
All right, let's do it. We'll be back in just a minute.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Indeed.com. When you're hiring for your business, you usually got to make a choice. Do you hire fast or do you hire well? But what if you wanted to do both? Then you need Indeed. Indeed helps you find top talent fast with their suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed's Instant Match, virtual interviews, and the tool I'm going to tell you about right now, screenings and assessments. Indeed helps star applicants shine before the interview with over 135 graded assessment tests they can take, anything from cooking to coding. And these assessments help take the stress out of the interview process. Candidates get to show their skills before the interview so you can dive deeper into talking about what's important to you. So join the over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Visit Indeed.com/iLab to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/iLab. That's Indeed.com/ILAB. Terms and conditions apply.
So, Derek, can you feel your expenses going up recently? Like has it hit your wallet? Has it hurt your bank account?
I think.
Have you bled?
I think I have. I'm bleeding right now. I've especially, obviously, the everyday stuff that everyone talks about, gas, food, etc. It's all up. The other thing I've noticed, which I'm sure you can speak to as well, is travel. I've been traveling a lot more again, not internationally, but a lot in the U.S. And accommodations, Airbnbs, hotels. I used to be able to get a pretty awesome hotel in any city, no matter what it is, the most expensive, the cheapest one, whatever it is. $200 a night would have got you a pretty awesome hotel. Now I'm going to tell you, even the cheap cities, it's hard to find $200 a night.
Wow. For $200 a night, I better be on my honeymoon. That is insane. But you know, I have felt it as well. Even though I try to stick to somewhat cheaper places, you know, the last few months, you know, I was in some more expensive cities in Vienna, in London, in Paris. And I think those places are always expensive. So when things go up, you really feel mm-hmm. it because it was already expensive. What I like about going to you know, cheaper countries or even just cheaper cities is even if something goes up by 20-30%, it still seems like a good deal. And that's a big reason why I would not live in California. I would live, you know, in 48 other states.
You know, you guys love to dump on California, but I get it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, I think people in California really just don't realize like how much more expensive everything is, you know, even beforehand. So it is a much better deal elsewhere. And the reason why I spent the last month here in Athens, Greece is it's always been one of the cheapest countries in the EU. And even here, like, things have gone up in price and the locals feel it hard. Luckily for me, I don't feel it very much because it's still very cheap. You know, the difference between paying, you know, $1.50 or €2.40 for a, you know, pita, like a gyros, versus paying €3, which right now is cheap because the euro has crashed against the dollar. For me, it's still cheap. It's still a $3 lunch. But for them, you know, they're thinking, man, this literally doubled in the last year or two.
I'm going to use our American version of the street euro. Let's take Chipotle. So I'm going to say 3 to 4 years ago, let's say pre-COVID, maybe 2018, 2019, I could have got a burrito for $7, $7 US. And I actually went there, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago. I hadn't gone there in a while, but I was like, oh, I'm here. It's close. It's quick. It was $12 for a burrito and no drink. Wow. That was just to get a water, just the burrito and a water.
Wow. Yeah, that's insane. Like I remember, you know, a burrito used to cost $7 and that was an expensive burrito.
Yeah, it felt like it was more like a little bit, maybe a little bit better than a fast food, but even McDonald's or any of them now, you used to be able to get a decent lunch for $5. That is, I mean, you're lucky if you're getting out of there under 10 now.
those days are long gone. I remember, you know, for the last couple of months, I've kind of just bit the bullet and say, you know what, lunch is going to cost me, you know, $15 wherever I go. So I might as well go somewhere I like.
Yeah.
Dinner is going to cost me, you know, $20-$30 minimum. So I might as well go somewhere I like.
I've been realizing too, if I just go to a sit down place, get served, get some real food, it's not much more, 10% more, 15% more for a 100% better product.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel like groceries have gone up as well?
Yeah, and one of my side hustles is obviously working in groceries, so I see this every single day. I've noticed, though, that people are still brand loyal. So even though the prices have gone up, I think people are still... I work in a really pretty high-end neighborhood, too, so maybe this is biased, but... I think a lot of times you'll see like, oh, you know, I don't need that name brand. I can get the generic one. It's the same thing. But I've noticed that even with the prices going up, people are still pretty brand loyal. So I don't know if that's a test to American marketing and products, but people are still paying up for these brand names when they could essentially get the same product in a generic.
Yeah, I would say there's some products that I will only buy the real brand for something like Heinz ketchup versus
sure.
You know, some other brand, normally too sweet. Maybe like sriracha sauce versus like whatever the knockoff is. But for most things, I don't care that much. You know, I'm like, I don't care what brand rice I'm buying or what brand, you know, even like, yeah, I mean, almost for everything else, if it's on sale, I'll buy the cheaper version.
What's your take on organic versus conventional foods, at least as the U.S. is concerned? Because we've had farming episodes where we've talked about our food system and how Europe definitely has a better situation. But do you think it's, I know you're Johnny, you're thrifty, you're saving money, but are you going to go for that organic over the regular?
You know, for a while, I was buying organic only, you know, free range eggs and grass fed, you know, butter, grass fed beef. I've stopped buying organic anything. I think most of it is just, they're just paying for label. But what I do try to buy still, is I will spend the extra money to buy like, you know, grass fed butter or grass fed beef. Cause I think it does make a big difference.
Yeah. I was really on a kick where I'm just going to buy organic and then you start seeing the prices and you're like, oh, is it that much better? So I, at times I will, but most of the time I'm going to go for the cheaper option.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, funny thing, about inflation is actually until very recently, we didn't calculate with the CPI. We actually used to use something called the core inflation number.
I've heard that term, but CPI has been the one that's been thrown around. What was that calculated based on compared to what we do the CPI on? What's the difference?
So, you know, kind of like for the last 20 years, whenever you hear about the stock market, you hear about the NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought, oh, the Dow Jones,
I mean, which is only 30 stocks.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and I've always thought, like, who cares about the Dow? Just tell us, like, you know, how much the total U.S. stock market has gone up or down. The CPI is the total price index with, you know, that basically covers everything. Consumer price index has, 13 categories, and, you know, it really covers a wide range of everything. The core inflation number, that doesn't include... get this, housing or groceries.
Oh, those aren't important things at all.
Yeah, or gas. So the three things that we...
Your three biggest expenses that, you know, every month.
Yeah. But the reason why they didn't include these is because those can change due to, you know, non-price factors. You know, so they can't control what, you know, the OPEC cartel is doing. They can't control what, you know, there's a shortage of something in the world, or there's like, you know, or there's a sudden, you know, change in housing prices because of interest rates. They kind of assume people are locked into their home. They're living in the same place. So that's not going to change, you know, and the other ones that they just were afraid that it might sway bias, you know, for other reasons outside of the control. But I am glad that we have changed the CPI because it just makes more sense.
Yeah. And what's the difference if we can't, if we can control it or not? I mean, things happen. It's, we can't control how much we pay at the gas pump. You know, I can't just walk into the court and go, yeah, it's, that seems a little bit high. Can we lower that price over here?
Well, actually, you can. You can get out of California where gas is always cheaper.
That's very true.
Yeah. So, okay. So speaking of gas, do you feel like it's high now or low now?
Well, it's specifically high in California right now. They're doing some refinery maintenance that I guess was unforeseen. So it drove up our prices like crazy. I did see it dropped a little bit. Let me see what the price is today in Los Angeles for a gallon of gas. It is, this was as of 2 weeks ago. So 2 weeks ago, it was $6.47 a gallon for a regular gallon of gas.
Ooh, it is dropping though, because a few months ago, I think at the peak was in June. That was the kind of the highest we've had probably ever.
Yeah.
So, the funny thing about these indexes, and we are on BLS.gov, that's the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. We're looking at the chart right now for gasoline, and it swings so much compared to everything else. It literally can swing from a negative 25, which means the price has dropped by 25% from the average, up to a plus 40.
Yeah.
So it can... It's one of those expenses that year by year or even month by month can change drastically.
The only real significant negative I can see in the last few years is March 2020, which obviously the demand went way down. It was down like 25 to 30%, but now we're right back up there. I think we're at currently it was about 20% up.
Yeah, so it is on its way back down, which is good. And, you know, it is one of those things where there is alternatives for most people to drive a smaller car or to ride a bicycle or to take public transport or move somewhere, you know, that has public transport. But in general, in the U.S., you know, people have their F-150s and they want to commute an hour a day and work, so... Gas costs money.
Yeah, I actually do need my car for a bulk of my income, but I'm trying to be as responsible as possible. I'm driving a hybrid car. I get 40 miles a gallon, which is really good, but it still adds up. I think we did our monthly expenses episode recently, and I spent about $300 a month just in gas.
Yeah, it is a high expense. So another expense that has gone up is electricity. Have you felt your bill creep up at all?
So I actually just looked this up while we were talking gasoline, and I looked at the rates. My place is so small that even if it did go up, I probably wouldn't really notice it because my bill's really low. So I looked up the actual rates of the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. And good news for me, at least, is 2022, they actually did not raise the rates for tier one and tier two. I guess the average like 2000 square foot house, 1500 square foot house would probably fall into a high tier two. So tier three and tier four are your big houses, your businesses, things like that. They actually raised rates for the top two tiers, and they kept the rates the same for the bottom two tiers. So I guess that's good news unless you own a mansion.
Yeah. You know what? That actually is smart because, you know, if you have a studio apartment, you probably can't afford to pay that much more anyways. Right. And you're already doing the responsible thing. You're having a small place, you know, but if you have a, you know, 5-bedroom house, or if you have a, you know, 20-bedroom mansion, you know, you probably don't need to be wasting all that electricity. Yeah, I guess for those people who are operating grow houses in their apartments,
you're the screwed.
Yeah. All right. What category do you want to talk about next?
I want to talk about one that I think has actually gone down. And it's not specifically on this list. I mean, it definitely lumps into a certain category, but this is one I think we don't realize kind of how lucky we are to have this. Is I just recently had to purchase a new TV.
Mm.
I got a 55-inch TV, full UHD, 4K, whatever, all the things in it, built-in Roku. It's a pretty awesome TV. Guess how much I paid for that TV, Johnny?
What brand was it?
It's a TCL brand.
Okay. So outside of the US, that TV would be $800 to $1,200.
Okay, I got it.
And I know this because I was in the market. I bought a 55-inch TV a few months ago, and they were all expensive. They're like, you know, I think the cheapest one I found was, you know, at $600 or $700. I feel like in the US, it's probably a ridiculously cheap price, maybe under 500.
Oh, keep going down, Johnny.
Well, I could tell you why it was so cheap, but it's all right. You know, I will tell you a quick side note story on this. My cousin Jacob had a 50-inch TV, an old plasma. Like, you know those things?
I liked the plasmas. I think the problem with those was they reflected off the windows. Was that those ones? They were hard to see if you had the window open.
Yeah, I mean, they had, you know, a bunch of problems. They're like the first generation flat screen TVs that you could put on your wall. He asked me where he can repair it. And I said, what? Why do you want to repair it?
Sounds crazy just right now.
Just buy a new TV. And he actually went and got a quote. And he said, it's going to cost me over $1,000 to repair. And I said, just buy a new one for $400.
That's like asking, where's the local blacksmith?
I mean, you know, if it was like an old cast iron, you know, something, you know, like a skillet, I would actually get that repaired. But it's a piece of electronics that I guarantee you it's slow. The resolution is nowhere as good as they are now, and you know the colors aren't going to be as good. There's not going to be built-in Roku.
Yeah,
you know, like why would you spend anything to repair that?
My old TV was over 10 years old. It actually lasted, and it still was working. I needed it for something else. So my main TV, I was like, I need to upgrade this. I paid on sale, to be fair, but Amazon, so free shipping. I had it in 2 days, $229.
Oh my God, that's insane, right?
I know. That's the only thing I can think of when we're talking what hasn't gone up in price. It has to be electronics.
But I will tell you why TVs in particular are so cheap.
I'm just going to guess it's the China factor.
That's part of it, but TVs in China are way more expensive.
Okay. So what do you got?
It's specific to the US. And it has something to do with your built-in Roku that you think is a feature.
Oh, to get the data. Okay.
So it's that, but also when they place, you know, Netflix or there are these other streaming services up front, and they push this advertising on you for you to sign up for, that's where they make their money.
That's a good point. I should take a picture of the remote, because on the remote, there are shortcuts to apps. And they have logos on them. There is.
And I can tell you right now, whatever those apps are the ones that are making money. Because I can guarantee you there isn't a YouTube button, because YouTube doesn't pay.
There is not a YouTube button. There is Netflix, Hulu. Yep.
Cha-ching. Cha-ching.
Disney Plus.
Cha-ching.
And Sling.
Cha-ching. Like, why would anybody want a Sling or a Hulu button over a YouTube button?
I've never hit the Sling button. I have hit the Hulu button, but I've never hit the Sling button in my life.
Well, their goal is for you to be like, oh, what is this Sling thing? Or for you to click it accidentally.
Yep, and it's all branded with their logos. So it's not just the same writing as everything else. It's like their actual logo. So it's a good idea. And it's, what's the one thing you look at probably almost every day? Your remote control on your TV.
Yeah, but I'm just a remote. When you log into your home screen, you're getting advertising.
Oh, yeah.
You're getting pushed to download these apps and sign up for these subscription services. So I don't know if it's a paper sign up where, you know, it's a literal affiliate link. More likely it's just, you know, by the number of people who buy the TVs, and just it's subsidized. And that's why they can sell you a 55-inch high-definition TV for $229.
That's a good point. It always crosses my mind that I see those ads, and I'm like, they're getting paid for that on the screen. But I didn't think about the physical remote itself, too. I don't know if it's totally working for Roku right now, because I just looked up their stock. In the last year, it's down 85%.
Yeah, but, you know, they're trying. So.
Not for lack of effort.
But, yeah, I would happily save $500 and look at some ads. It just, unfortunately, outside of the US, you know, it doesn't work that way. We don't have these subsidized products like, you know, like Kindle, for example. You know, you can literally buy one with ads or without ads.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. What do you want to jump to next, Johnny?
So one thing that I'm not really, this is one item that I can't really tell if it's gone up or down in price. Apparel, clothes. Do you feel like it's gone, prices have gone up or down?
I don't know. I don't buy clothes as much as I should, honestly. And when I do, I'm usually looking for something on sale. I usually don't, if it's regular price, unless it's something I really, really want, I'm probably not going to buy it. I'm looking for a sale.
Yeah. According to the chart, it has gone up a bit, but I think it really depends on, you know, so many factors. Like in the US, it's unfair because prices for things like this get cheaper over time. Just because, you know, they're mass produced, there's more competition. Mm-hmm. You know, people start buying things from, you know, places like Target or H&M that just kind of mass produce, you know, and just sell a lot of it, yep. You know, versus smaller kind of boutique places. Outside of the US, there's not actually that many sales. Like, for example, when was the last time anyone's paid full price for a pair of Nikes in the US?
Like, it's almost,
yeah. But try buying a pair of Nikes in Europe on sale. They just never go on sale. Like, you walk into a store, a sports store, and instead of seeing every item on sale, like sometimes everything's full price, and it's a completely different business model.
You're right. In Kyiv, I saw a place that was selling Jordans. So I was like, oh, let me check these out. You know, it's cheap in Ukraine. I can maybe get a deal. There wasn't a deal. It was full price. It was like, you know, $200 plus when he did the conversion rate. And I was like, what is going on here? This is a cheap country. The shoes should be cheaper, but I can get a better deal in the U.S.
Yeah. So in the U.S. in general, consumer goods are the cheapest place in the world, including China, where most of it's made.
Which is wild because it had to make that trek across the ocean and get here, and it's still cheaper.
Yeah. The one thing that's not cheaper in the U.S., housing.
Oh, I'm aware.
Do you feel like yeah. Do you feel like rent has... You know, maybe not for you because you probably locked in, but do you think rent has gone up recently?
Rent has 100% gone up because every time I think about moving and I want to get a bigger place, I'm just like, are these people actually getting this rent? So the prices just look crazy. And then I'll reach out to some of these places where I'm like, all right, you know, that seems like an okay deal. And I'll say that I'm interested, and they say, oh, sorry, I already got 30 applications in like 2 days. So the demand, especially in Los Angeles, but what I'm hearing is from every major city, essentially, is the demand is so high that these landlords can essentially ask whatever they want. And in many cases, they're getting offers for a higher rent amount just so someone can guarantee that they get into the property.
Yeah, it's insane. And I've heard it's not just in California. It's now, you know, spread across the U.S. Even in these smaller, cheaper, you know, cities that traditionally people moved to because, you know, it was less. It's the some people call it the California effect.
Yeah, I was just in Austin, Texas, and let me tell you, half the people I met were from California, and it is not cheap to live there anymore. You miss the boat if you're going there now.
You know, one funny thing is people in Mexico City were complaining that too many people from California are moving in.
How these insane illegal immigrants. Is that? If you think about saying that like 10 years ago.
Yeah, so we've driven up housing prices everywhere.
Well, you're one of them too, Johnny. You're not innocent. You're from California too.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I try to go to places where Californians don't go. So. Maybe I'm setting the trend. Yeah. But yeah, my original plan was if I ever move back to the US, I would just move to like, you know, I was going to move to Austin, or I was going to move to like Nashville or something. So, you know, these kind of cheaper places. But yeah, that's no longer a thing. They're not cheap anymore. I don't know if there's any, you know, decent city in the world, in the US. And let us know in the Boss Lounge if you know of a hidden gem, if, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma is still cheap, let us know, because I have a feeling that even there, prices have gone up.
Yeah, I think Tulsa, since you bring it up, I think they had some kind of program where you can actually get like a $20,000 grant or some kind of thing for working remotely there. Don't quote me on that, but Oklahoma has some kind of program like that. But these cities that I think we thought were kind of these hidden gems, they all got discovered during COVID because everyone was at home researching where to move, where to live, and it doubled or tripled the prices in all these little kind of medium tier cities. So yeah, if you know one that's kind of hasn't been discovered yet, let us know in the Boss Lounge. It's not that big of a community. They won't overtake the whole city right away, at least.
Yeah. So we won't get into it too much, but housing prices to buy have gone up as well. Though I do think that it is on its way back down.
So I've been trying to buy a house forever. I've been talking about it, and I thought it was really close earlier this year. And I got my mortgage person. She said, file your taxes. And I said, I made more income, so you should get a higher amount. But here's the problem with that is, I filed them. I had higher income to show, and I'm self-employed, so it's just that much harder to get a loan anyways. For those of you out there with a W-2 job, it's a lot easier to get a loan than a self-employed person. Anyways, she said, I can't give you a higher amount. She goes, I can only give you the same amount I gave you last year. And that's because the interest rate has gone up so much compared to what it was, 3-4 months earlier, that your payment would be the same your payment would be that much higher on the same house than it would have been had we done this a few months ago. So I'm still screwed to buy a place in Los Angeles is because prices have gone up, but I can't get a higher loan because the interest rates have gone up so much.
Yeah. And the interest rates are going to continue to go up, and housing prices are going to start dropping. So in a few months, maybe we can do an episode on that when we have our next big crash, as Johnny FD is predicting right here today.
I've actually seen, I get Zillow alerts and things like that there have been some big price jumps, but I think a lot of it right now is these people set these sky high prices, maybe not even intending to sell, but they said, hey, if I get this price, I can't say no to that. So I think these people that were asking ridiculous prices are starting to come to reality that, hey, if I really am serious about selling this, I need to drop the price. But it's still higher than it was. It's definitely not a crash. But the expectation that you can ask anything for your house, no matter what it is, and it'll just get bought, is definitely gone.
Yeah. Well, on that same thought, let's jump to our last category, our favorite category that we could probably talk about for hours and hours, but we'll try to keep this within 10 minutes or so. Cars, both. You want to start with new cars or used cars?
Let's start with new, because I have a. Okay, well then I have a used car story for us after.
Okay, new cars. What have you seen for the last few months? Cars, new cars, just like were impossible to buy, and if you wanted to buy one, it would always be over sticker, over MSRP, which is ridiculous because for the last 50 years, nobody even wanted to pay MSRP. They wanted to go into the discount. Nobody walked in saying, yeah, I'll pay that, whatever that sticker says.
Yeah. I have some new car stories too, now that I think about it. Remember, we did a car episode a while back. I can pull up the number. I was going to buy a Ford Maverick, their new little pickup truck. So here's what happened. The demand was crazy for him on the 2022 models. So the dealer said, he's like, okay, we'll get you priority on the list for 2023. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. I don't need it right away. So I order it and I go, why don't we order two? And then the prices are so crazy on these things. They're going 10 to 15,000 above sticker. And there was no penalty if I ordered a second one, and I could always back out of it for just a $500 deposit. So I said, let's do that. And that was episode 236, if you guys want to go back and listen to that of the podcast. So I put my order in. The very first day slots open up, I'm in. I'm like, hey, I ordered two of them. One was blue. One was like a gray. And he's like, all good. I got you in there. We're in the system. It's sent it to Ford. You know, you'll be on the factory order list. So I didn't hear anything for a few days. And I was like, I haven't even paid my deposit yet. Like, what's going on? So I guess Ford received over 110,000 orders on this truck in the first 2 days, and they're only building 30,000 trucks. So needless to say, my order did not get in, and Derek was very unhappy that he is not getting a new Ford Maverick anytime soon within the next year.
You know, I'm also disappointed because I like that car. I wanted you to have it. Especially for that price, which we'll probably never see again.
Yep. And they did raise the price a little bit over. They raised it about $1,000, but still a deal for under $30,000. You could get a pretty awesome truck. So that's not going to happen. I did look at kind of the competitor, the Hyundai Santa Cruz. It's a four door pickup truck as well. I liked it. I didn't like that. It was $40,000. So it was another $10,000. My payment would have been about $700 a month. I debated just paying in cash with it or getting a loan, but the loan rate was only 3%. So I figured that was pretty good. But I was like, for a Hyundai, I'm going to pay $700 a month. I don't know. I just couldn't justify it.
Yeah. You know, I think right now, on one hand, we are lucky that they're not asking us to pay over MSRP. I think
that was the only, that's a good point. That was the only dealership that I could find in within 2 hours that would let me buy it at sticker price. Everyone else had a markup on it.
You know, it's insane when you think about it, right? Because that's become the new normal. But imagine saying this to yourself 3 years ago. Like, you're begging any car dealership.
To pay retail.
Not even like a, yeah, like not even a specific new hot car that just came out, but just like, I just want to buy a car. I will pay full price. Who wants to sell me a car? And people are like, nope.
Yeah, it's crazy. I will not, or any product for that matter. You're begging to pay actual full price. And people are like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah. So I'm happy that that is dying down and going away. And also so kind of two gripes I have about the way that we buy cars in the US. One is it's ridiculous needing to go through a dealer and dealing with all that, you know, headache and BS of, you know, of arguing about the price, dealing with the terms, and then even just like the ordering process where it doesn't make sense to go to a local dealer, put down a deposit, and then have them say, okay, now the official list is open. Like, yeah, now you can go and actually order it. Like, why not just have the manufacturer make a list where, kind of like Tesla, where you go on you pay whatever the price is, and then you order directly through them, and the local dealer has nothing to do with it. You know, if anything, at the very, very last step after it's built, they can ask, where do you want to deliver? And you can, and then you can have it delivered to a local dealer if you want.
Well, I'll tell you why that's the case and why Tesla was very smart not to do what all the other automotive manufacturers did. Unfortunately, back in the day before internet and all these other things, is dealers are actually not technically owned by the manufacturer. They're a franchisee. And in the franchisee contract, it states that almost, I think this applies to almost every manufacturer in the US, that any transaction to purchase a new vehicle has to go through a dealer. You cannot directly purchase from the factory. So these automotive manufacturers want to get out of these contracts, but they can't because they're locked in with these franchisees.
Yeah, I really hope that changes. And also, I think as Americans, we've been too entitled to think that we can just show up to a dealership, you know, on a Sunday without any, you know, prior notice and just find the exact car we want on the lot and drive it off, you know, the same day. It's ridiculous that we think that it's okay for these dealers to spend, you know, millions of dollars to buy, you know, to try to pick and choose and think, okay, what combination, what colors do we think people might want to buy, and then store it on these lots for us for us to show up and buy it. I do like the order process. I think that's fair for everyone. You know, it would be nice to have some kind of dealerships to, you know, like official service centers to fix the cars, but also to test drive them. And even if we have to pay, like I actually think test drives shouldn't be free. I think, you know, they should just charge, you know, $30 for an hour and you can go, you know, drive the car, see if you like it. And, you know, if you crash it, you know, you have insurance. But I think that would be a better business model for everyone.
You've turned on me, Johnny. I disagree that you should charge for test drives, but just because they're fun. And I think the price you pay for doing a test drive is having to put up with the pushy dealer people. So I think you pay a price no matter what.
But wouldn't you rather pay $30 and not have to talk to the salesman?
Yeah, okay. If that's the case, $30 and you leave me alone, I'll gladly pay that.
Yeah, like imagine you could just like show up to the service center and just like, or you could book it online so you don't have to talk to anyone. Like it's like booking a rental car, but instead of spending, you know, $70 for a day, you spend $30 an hour. I would probably test drive cars all the time just for fun.
Okay, that's a good point. I would do that. I just don't want to deal with the salespeople. But there haven't been any cars to test drive recently. But now I've been seeing the lots, they're actually starting to fill up. And I think these markups are coming down because as much as I hate it, I don't blame the dealer for saying, if I sell it for $5,000 over sticker, I still have an empty lot. So why not?
Yeah, it is crazy because I would rather have the manufacturer charge $5,000 more and at least they make some money so they can be encouraged to build better cars or cars with more features. But when the dealer gets it, we get nothing from it.
Yeah, totally true. And they try to hide it in these weird like packages called like dealer installed options or something, which means they just like put their sticker on the back and it costs $5,000 or something. It's
stupid. Yeah, which, and I want that sticker off anyways. Right?
Yeah, take that thing off. I'm not your billboard.
Yeah. And also the order process, I think it's actually ridiculous that we can just pay a $500 refundable deposit and, you know, pre-order a car that we may not have an intention to actually buy, you know, like, and, you know, not to blame you because I'd say I would have done the same, but I don't think that dealers should be allowed to let us pre-order two cars, you know, so we can flip them. I don't think that's good for as a order system. And obviously it doesn't work because as you saw, Ford had to cancel the orders because there was too many.
Yeah, I think it's also on Ford, though, too. They knew the kind of demand that this thing was going to get and they're claiming supply chain issues, blah, blah, blah. But they're a multi-billion dollar company. If they can't figure it out and Tesla can, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So fun trivia.
Okay.
I went online to put down a deposit on a brand new car.
Okay. I think I know the car because you brought this up. I don't know if you could pre-order it though, but is it the new Lotus?
Yes.
Oh, what's it called again? Okay.
Lotus Emira. It's an amazing car. They have some. Yeah, it's in the US, it's not out yet, and you can't pre-order it yet.
Oh yeah, that's sexy. That's a nice car.
Yeah, it's the perfect supercar. And the reason why I was going to pre-order it, to a little story. Back in, I think it was early 2000s, I had a friend who worked for Motor Trend magazine. Mm-hmm. And she would FedEx me overnight the new issues of Motor Trend.
Oh, I had a stack when I was a kid, like just piled up.
I loved it.
I read them front to back. Yeah. I could tell you every single, I love the issue every year where they had the every model of every car. I recognize, I like memorized everything about the cars.
So I don't remember what year it was, but Motor Trend actually was the, you know, the first source to have the Lotus Elise come to the US.
Okay.
Ever. It wasn't online anywhere. Like I got it in the mail and it says, you know, Motor Trend exclusive. Lotus Elise is coming to the US. I think this was in 2000.
When was it? When did it come out? When did it come out of the US?
In the US, I think 2008? They came out like 2005-ish, but they had been in Europe for a while, I believe, before that.
Yeah. So whatever it was 1 year before that. And I read that feature and I thought, oh my God, this is your chance to buy a, you know, a supercar, like for 50 grand that has a Toyota engine. So it's probably not going to break on you. And I Googled it. There was no information at all online that it was actually coming to the US. So I told my sister, buy this car. Like, even if you don't keep it, just put your name down, buy it, and you can always flip it for more. And she ended up doing it. She ended up actually keeping it. She loved it.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. So I'm looking up, 2005 was the first model year in the US, and it sold brand new for $42,990.
Yeah, insane, right? So I thought this was going to be another one of those. And I thought for advertise starting at 59,000 British pounds, and the pound is so weak right now, I thought, wow, I will buy this. And then just in 1 or 2 years when it actually comes out, I can either sell it, maybe make a real profit, or if I happen to be back in the US then, you know, maybe it's time for Johnny to have a supercar. This is like the one time, you know, before I have kids that I can own one. But then when I started going through the process, I realized in the US, it's not 59,000 pounds. It starts at $94,000, which means
that's Porsche territory almost now.
It's way more. It's like, it's $100,000 basically. And it's a $5,000 deposit. And I thought, you know what? I'm not really going to buy this.
It's a super limited car though. So you might do well on it. That's the risk though. It's like, it's not like a house. If you buy a house, you're pretty much guaranteed that at some point you're going to get some equity in it. The car thing is tough.
Yeah. But I think if I lived in the US, I would probably put down a deposit anyways and just kind of have it as an option. And then if I couldn't, I think ideally I would drive it, you know, I would make a deal with someone. I'll say, look, I'll sell it to you for just 10 grand over, but I want to drive it for a month.
I think that's a fair trade-off. I could arrange a garage space here in LA for you, Johnny, too. Just leave me a set of keys.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that would have been nice, but yeah, I'm not in the US. I don't want to deal with the where to ship it or taxes and things like that. So I've decided to opt out, but I was very, very excited for a while. And I do encourage anyone who has $100,000 to waste on a super sleek sports car to check out the new Lotus Emira.
I love it. Before we get into making this an entire whole car episode as we could, we should probably wrap it up. What else do we have to say about inflation? I mean, there's not much we can do, which sucks. We talked to iBonds a couple of weeks ago to just kind of hold a little bit of your cash and hedge against it. Has it really changed any buying patterns for you, Johnny?
You know, I've actually spent more money this last couple of months knowing that inflation was kicking in. So I just wanted to enjoy myself. So it almost sounds counterintuitive, but I knew inflation was coming. So I went out and I started just buying all the things that I ever wanted to buy. I literally bought saffron for the first time. Just because I knew, you know what? Like, it's expensive now. It's just going to get more expensive. Let me just invest.
Yeah. And hopefully if you've been a listener to the podcast for a while and you follow a lot of our passive income strategies, that inflation, although it sucks, it hasn't hurt you too bad. I noticed the price difference, but we still calculate, you know, our monthly or quarterly net worth and things like that. And it hasn't changed a lot. It's not growing at a crazy pace like 2021 was, but I think we all knew that wasn't sustainable too.
Yeah. I think overall, like it hurts the pocket a little bit. Now I'm going to start cutting down on what I spend because it's starting to be painful, especially with this huge credit card bill at the end of the month. But
you know, at the same time, I think we were both in a position where we're fortunate enough where it's not going to change our life too much. I do feel bad for people who are on fixed incomes, because that really screws them. Because imagine if they're barely making things, you know, ends meet anyways. Now they're fucked.
Yeah, that's really tough. And the great side of being an investor is, although it looks bad on paper, you know, market's down 20%+, potentially your house could be going down here if things continue. But overall, we have history. We have hundreds of years, over 100 years of data that as long as you can hang on, it's gonna all come back, and it's gonna come back better than ever. And it's happened time and time again. And the best thing we found is not to panic in times like these and sell everything. You should, if anything, you should be buying more at this time.
Yeah. And when things, you know, at the grocery store or the car market aren't a good value, the housing market, or, you know, don't feel like a good value, I think that's when we should be buying stocks. At least that is one thing that's down right now. So at least something's on sale.
Yeah. So suck up that crappy apartment you're in a little bit longer. Maybe drive your old beater car a little bit longer. It's going to turn around. You'll get that shiny new car. And guess what? If you wait a few more months or maybe another year, you're going to have that much more money to get something better anyways.
Yeah. And speaking of used cars, there are lots of signs that car dealerships, used car dealerships, are finally starting to sell, to discount their cars. And they realize they're screwed because they overpaid for all these used cars in the last few months.
Yeah. Look at Carvana, for instance. That's a whole episode we could go into as well, but a really bad situation about to happen there.
Yeah. So guys, just hang on tight because things are going to get cheaper very, very soon. That's our prediction, at least. So let us know what you've felt, what you've seen in your own spending habits, in your own lives. Go ahead and post it on the Boss Lounge. And Derek, that was a fun episode.
Yeah, definitely, Johnny. We will put the links to these charts that we've been referencing as well in the show notes. So make sure to check that out. But with that, we'll talk to you bosses next week.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.